Welcome to the RUF SCAD podcast. Martin Antoon here today, coming from downtown Savannah, actually, with Nick Kutsikas. Nick, welcome.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll start with the fun basic stuff. Give us like the real short intro. Where are you from? How'd you end up at SCAD, et cetera?
Yeah, I've told this story a lot. For whatever reason, a lot of my classes are always asking me, like, how'd you get into SCAD? What's your story? So I feel like I have this story down. Let's see if I can give you a three-act structure. The year was 2011, and I was visiting my middle school for the very first time. And in order, like, for me to get to where I am now, we were going over, like, extracurricular courses at my middle school, being like, this is what, like, we have a track team. We have all sorts of sports and stuff at the middle school. And there's this one club, it's called the Film Club. And I was like, ooh, as this like 11-year-old kid who's like just recently discovered, I think I saw Captain America, the first Avenger. And I was like, movies are kind of cool. I can make my own. That's interesting. And like literally from there, I got like really obsessed. I don't know if you have this experience that when you were a kid, but like when you get enraptured by something,
yeah,
that it becomes like this thing that you can't stop thinking about. Mm-hmm. And that was film for me for a good like 3 or 4 months during the first couple for the first 3 months of sixth grade was like doing films and stuff, and it's all like, you know, bad cheesy stuff that I edited on my iPhone or it was like an iPod Touch 4, if you ever those.
Sure.
For those of you who want a really nice editing program, if you live in 2011, Splice, if you guys, it was just this editing software called Splice that like you could add like one layer of video and like two layers of audio. It was great.
Yeah, you didn't really have that many options at that point.
No, but it was enough.
Unless you were filthy rich.
Yeah, it was enough to like to really get you started. And I, as this kid, I was like, I have so much power in my phone or in my pocket to do whatever I want. I could set up a camera and like just act out things. Like I did a trailer for Lord of the Rings. I did a secret agent man sort of stuff for a bit. And then I made a movie that was all about like time traveling middle schoolers for my sixth grade film club,
nice.
Which is what that thing was actually
nice,
for.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't win, sadly. It did not win. Somebody else won. But that was like the first moment where I was like, okay, there's something here. And then it just kind of built throughout high school, and then like sophomore, junior year, I was like, I think I want to see if I can go into film as a career. And I started poking around. I was looking around for colleges, and SCAD came up. It just kept coming up over and over again. And I was like, let me just see what this place is about. Visited a couple times. It seemed pretty cool. And I decided to pull the trigger, and here I am now.
And here you are.
Yeah.
What, 10 years later, almost.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I'm told I'm very lucky to, I'm not told. I recognize how lucky I am that I realized what I wanted to do for my career, like, so early. Because I could gear my high school pathway towards that.
Yeah.
Because my high school had, like, a interactive media program that you could join as a junior, but you had to know that you wanted to do it as a sophomore, mm-hmm. which is pretty early for somebody that doesn't have any direction in their life yet.
Yeah, that's right.
So you have to kind of know kind of what you want to do. And I was lucky enough to meet some really cool people there, and we still hang out sometimes whenever I'm at home.
So what was it about the process, kind of the inception of realizing that something about film clicked, either watching or making? What was it about that really connected with you, where it's like, this is really something that I want to do?
I am unlike a lot of film majors in that I just found it cool. And that's about where it started for me. I was like, oh, this is awesome. Cause my first couple big movies were Captain America, the First Avenger, and Tron Legacy. Those were the ones that really like blew my middle school mind.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to do that. I want to like make something that's just a really fun adventure. And I've noticed I'm like, I just want to make something that makes people feel like, oh, that was incredible. Like that scene, like in Godzilla 2014, where Godzilla like pulls open the Muto's jaw and like breathes his atomic breath into him. Like at the very last minute of the movie, where the movie like spent the whole time building up to this one moment, like that's awesome. That's the stuff that I want
to
make.
So you don't feel an obligation to like pretend like Citizen Kane was the movie that did it for you?
No, but Citizen Kane, I'm bad film major over here. I saw that for the first time 2 days ago.
Did not know that this was very timely.
Yeah, right.
So how did that, was that by choice or was somebody like, okay, you actually have to watch this movie before you graduate?
I just felt it was about time. I was like, I got to see this movie.
Yeah.
I'm circling the drain. I got to get around to it eventually.
Well, so what did you think then?
I thought it was good. I thought it was really good. I'm developing more of a more refined taste for movies. That's not just, oh, cool, explosions and stuff. I'm like, I kind of see like what it is they're saying about society and life and bits of philosophy here and there. Cause I'm older and I'm maturing and I can see my movie taste growing as I get older. Which is fun. Cause then I'm like, I'm not even sure what I'm going to like in 5 years. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe I'll be like, maybe my film taste will totally change. Cause right now my film career is kind of dictated by that, is like by my film tastes, which means for me, since I don't feel comfortable like creating a really artful, character-driven story. I don't feel comfortable being a director necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of film majors, everybody wants to be a director. Yeah. Everybody wants to make their own movies and be like the captain of their own ship. I would love to be a DP instead, a director of photography. And for those of you who don't know, that's the guy who controls the camera and lights. So he's working with a lot of really high-end gear, lots of fancy like cameras and directing people to like move lights around, and he controls what the frame looks like. So that way I have control of like how the movie looks, but the heart of the story is out of my control, which is strange to think about as like, I want to be in the film industry, but I don't want to like make stories necessarily. Mm-hmm. I want to be the one that executes the vision. Which is a different, I've noticed like everybody else wants to like I said, be their own guy, but I've never really felt that from the beginning. I've always like wanted to be the guy that shoots it rather than writes it.
Yeah. I mean, someone has to like help realize the vision.
Yeah.
If it's actually going to be something.
Which is nice because, that means that I'm on set all the time, not scared. I was on a set last weekend, the very first weekend of the quarter. I was on set as a grip, for this pretty big action movie, which is the first one I've been on at SCAD, actually. It was pretty cool. And then I've got things lined up. Chandler, friend of the show, Chandler, he is directing a movie on this, I think, week 7, and I'm gaffing that.
Yeah, very cool.
So that's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah. You know, there's something refreshing about what you're saying where it feels like sometimes there's this dichotomy between a film has to be super artful and say this very provocative, profound message, or it has to be like a fun, cool movie. And I think part of me wants to say like, no, it can do both. Like it can say something, but you can also have fun watching it. Like it's nice to kind of meet in the middle. There's some directors who just do that really well.
Mm-hmm. I think the best movies do that, like do both. You can have a really, really fancy, artful movie, but nobody's going to see it because it's slow and boring.
Yeah.
Because most people aren't really down for that. They want to have something driving the story that's more than somebody's like some character's internal desire for acceptance, and that is the driver of the plot. And that may be a really well and very difficult movie to make, but that's not enough to sell a movie in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with like, because that's more like the indie movie scene.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, not at all. But if you want to reach a wider audience, you're going to need a little bit more than that.
Like when somebody says, I appreciate, this is like the nice way to say that's what that movie is. When someone says, yeah, I think I appreciated it more than I enjoyed it. It's like, what that means is you thought that movie was boring and you thought they did some things well, but you didn't really enjoy watching it.
It's
this might be room to do both in a movie.
I've seen a couple movies where I'm like, I appreciate what they're doing. And like, there's a part of me, like the film major that's growing inside of me.
Yeah.
We'll say this movie is good for these reasons. But then the child in me that like started this whole thing is like, yeah, but you're never going to watch the movie ever again. So who cares?
Yeah.
And as, it's weird to like admit that because everybody else at SCAD has this, they're very like, they're very artsy and they're very, like story driven. And it's very strange. Cause like, this is the artist, this is the this is an art school. This is about creating art. And it's very strange being there and like going, but I'm not necessarily here for the art aspect. I'm here for the career aspect of it, which is almost, I feel like it's heresy to say, but like you, in order to be really good at, as a director of photography, you need to have all that art skills. So it's still important to know. And that's why I'm like kind of creating this, or not creating, what's the word? That's why I want to develop this like artsy, or this person that can appreciate the artistic side of it and is more than just cool things exploding and big monsters that. Yeah. You need that. If you want to be able to make it look cool, you got to understand why people feel that way. And it's more than just cool camera angles and explosions. There's so much more emotion that comes to it. Like Mission Impossible. Which one do I want to use? I like 4 a lot because that one's mostly just an action movie, but it's so tense and it's just like on the edge of your seat. Like everything is falling apart at once and every character is on the edge of their seats or like on the edge of their, at the end of the rope rather.
Yeah.
And you know, in the hands of a poor director and a poor director of photography, like that movie wouldn't work. But if you know how to manipulate the audience's emotions properly to make them as tense as Tom Cruise is,
yeah,
you got to know the art to do that. So,
that's right. It's like as easy as it is to write off like what people would call like in quotes like big dumb action movie. It's like no, there actually is an art to crafting something like that. Like,
yeah,
it is telling a story in a different way. It's a visual story. It's showing you something.
Yeah,
it's like there's intensity behind what they're giving you more than maybe what's being said. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I remember they used to talk at Loyola where I studied music industries a lot about. It's like we tend to kind of frame it like if you are trying to make a career out of it, you're selling out. And they said that's kind of silly. Find what you want to do and then figure out how to monetize it. Like,
yeah,
wouldn't you like to make a living doing the thing that you love? Like, don't compromise on it. Just figure out what it looks like to be able to make a career out of it. Mm-hmm. There's value there for sure.
There's something about that, like, that's really valuable to understand. I mean, you can be a Da Vinci and like create the best, most amazing paintings, but during your life, you're going to starve every day.
Yeah.
And that's not really where I'm at. I don't want to do that. I want to enjoy
eating
life.
Eating is good too.
Yeah. Like painting is nice, but also want to like raise a family and like have a nice, nice house with, you know, all the accoutrements of life. Yeah, so
for sure,
you know, creating like the best kind of art is what you want to do, but you have to think about like yourself and your family first. And that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Is to like figure out how to make money, develop some sort of like skill set to prepare me for bigger and better projects that may like show themselves down the future. So that when I'm like, I can properly take those, maybe those like more artsy and like more meaningful projects down the road and I'll be able to like take risks. Cause right now, like, and here's the other thing, like everybody wants to be the, like be the captain of their own ship, but that also means that there's no crew.
Yeah.
So you have a bunch of people that come out like ready to be, you know, the captains, and then there's nobody to actually like run the ship itself. So and that's why I'm always on set, because like everybody's like always asking for grips or for a gaffer or for something, and everybody wants to be the DP and everybody wants to be the. Nah, man, if you want to get in there, you like you got to start low, and then you just build up from there, and then you know you have a better chance of like actually getting a job in the future.
There's something that's actually sort of refreshingly beautiful about the way you're describing and it not being so glamorous and more pragmatic. There's something kind of refreshing about that, like just about being part of the process and being willing to help someone realize a vision like as a good thing and as a necessary thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody mentioned while I was on a set, I think last year, to love the process, not the product.
Mm-hmm.
And while we get into the film industry for the end product, you have to really enjoy the process as well.
Yeah.
Like you gotta, in order to get that really nice looking image with the cool story and, you know, in order to get to the red carpet, you gotta wake up at 5 a.m. You gotta drive maybe an hour to set, and it's going to be a really hot day in Atlanta, and you're going to be working for 12 hours a day, moving heavy things around. And then you're going to go to sleep at maybe like 8 p.m. and then, no, not even that. Like you probably get home at like 11 and then do it all over again the next day. Like, that's what you're going to have to fall in love with.
Not to mention, it's not like a film gets made in a week.
No.
It's like, no. If you can't embrace the process, it's going to be a hard 10-ish months of production just to enjoy the film. Yeah,
and let's not, I mean, if you want to like make real money, you got to manage people as well. So like you can be a low-level guy, and that's fine. If you want to be a grip, you can make a pretty good living about that. But if you want to like go further, that means that you got to involve yourself in pre-production. Production will last on a typical movie, I think, like maybe 3 months. But that's like after maybe a year of planning.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have 3 months and then another however many months it takes to edit.
Right.
So it's like a sort of small.
Not a short time.
No, it's a small, small amount of time when you're actually in that. And if you want to like do real work, you got to involve yourself in pre-production, which is just brutal. Because that's the part that I struggle with the most, is just planning and all the logistics and stuff.
Yeah. Well, so one of the things you alluded to a minute ago that we can kind of tie in is thinking about film and creativity in the context of like broader arenas of life too. And one of the things that we like to talk about on the show is sort of this intersection between faith and creativity. So as someone who's been at SCAD and around RUF for, I guess at this point now, 2.5 years, give us sort of the story of your faith, whether that was like how you became a Christian or if there was sort of a pivotal moment in the way that you thought about faith or who Jesus was. Like what has that looked like for you?
2.5 years, man. That's insane.
I was like adding it up as I was saying that.
I know, right?
That didn't really sound right, but it is.
Yeah. Time flies, dude. If any freshmen are listening to this, enjoy yourself. Just enjoy it. Just enjoy whatever's happening. I would say I grew up in a Christian family, so I would have had like this big coming to Christ moment, not in the same way as like somebody else might if they found their faith later in life. I always grew up in it. I grew up in a Christian elementary, middle school, and high school was the first time I really like stepped out of that Christian bubble and went into the real world. And everybody was all of a sudden like way meaner, which is good because then you can like expose yourself to new types of people and like build yourself up as the person that's not like super sensitive and stuff, which is nice. And around high school is when I started to join my church. I was, if you can't tell, I'm a very like gearhead sort of guy. So I joined, my church was big enough to like, have, lights and stage stuff. And I have a pretty big like worship production. So I was like, I want to do that. I want to work lights. So I was the lighting designer. I worked my way up to become the head lighting designer at the church for like, I want to say 7 years, but I don't think it was that long. I think it was more like three years where I was the lighting designer. I just like to say seven because it sounds good. Because I started my whole time like working there was like 7 years, but the main bulk of it was the last three. And I was like, yeah, I feel really connected because every time you do worship, like that's where I felt the most connected to God was during those like worship moments, where you're just kind of letting yourself go into letting the Holy Spirit wash over you, and that's. Quite cheesy, but I mean, there's no real way to describe it. It was more than just like, you just sit down and worship because you can't, for me, I can't just sit down and like decide, okay, I'm going to like enjoy this and like kind of like worship God. There's a lot of like preparation that kind of goes into it. And for me, I would say, when I was working there, I befriended everybody. And that was a major aspect of it. Like, it was not just like, I can't wait to worship God. No, it was like, I can't wait to wake up and create something really cool with my friends and hang out with them before, during, and after church and fellowship with them in the Holy Spirit. It was like that sort of thing. And it was awesome. It was really cool. And then I went to college and all that went away and I had to like kind of redefine what faith was. Cause up until that point, that was it. There was no real like Christian, Christian philosophy. Like I wasn't reading the Bible. It wasn't really like, if you asked me, you know, what is the major linchpin to Christianity? I would say Jesus' death on the cross, but I wouldn't go any deeper and I couldn't. And I think realizing that I think realizing that was kind of like the first moment where I was like, I don't think I'm as strong of a Christian as I think I should be, even though I've been doing it for like, I guess I got here in 2018. So 18 years, like I was a Christian for 18 years. I got baptized in the church, but I didn't really like know what that meant. So being here in Savannah, actually, you know, being outside of the shell, outside of my old church, kind of forced me to either like double down or give up entirely. And I was about to give up entirely because I built kind of like my identity around this idea of being a Christian. And I was in one way, I was like, it was too late now. I got to commit. But also like it's way more Christianity has so much hope in the way that it like presents itself that I didn't want to give that up, especially since SCAD is a very like secular school and it's all like kind of sad and depressing at times, where it's just you work all day and then you go to sleep and you wake up and do it again. And that freshman year was like really, I needed something to like something else other than just that freshman year. And RUF was actually a great way to like get out of the dorm or the library and like get away from my work and do something like good. And also like kind of figure out exactly how, like how to, like, what does it mean to really be a Christian and go deeper than just, building light shows and hang out with friends.
Right. Was there a moment where you really felt that decision of, all right, I've sort of been in this environment my whole life. Am I really going to invest in it here at SCAD or sort of step back? Or was it more of just like 2.5 years later, I look back and here I am having grown. Was there a moment where you really felt that decision before you, or was it more gradual than that?
Oh yeah. I think it was around, it was one of the first sermons that you gave when you mentioned like, going to RUF is great. And you mentioned this like pretty much every other week, going to RUF is great, but you need to get connected to a church as well. RUF is not a substitute for like the body of Christ. And I was like, that's true. And up until that point, I really hadn't been going to church because I left my old church in Maryland. By the way, I'm from Maryland. I left my old church in Maryland like, I want to say a year before I left for SCAD, or like I was basically like working my way out of it. And I wasn't going to that church for any sermons. It was just for lights. It just kind of became a job.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like losing my want to go to church for anything, everything else other than just the cool work stuff. Mm-hmm. So I had to make a decision. Am I going to like take your advice? Am I going to join a church because I want to, or am I just going to let it go and head to RUF just because there's some cool people there? And that was the moment where I was like, I got to double down and commit. And if I'm going to commit, like the way I have a saying, if you're going to do something, do it 100%. Like, if you know me, you probably heard me say that before. So I'm like, I'm going to read books whenever I can. I want to like meet pastors and like talk outside of church services, which I do with Evan every Monday, which is really nice. We're going over the book of John, and that's been really helpful. Like going over specific books of the Bible and like really reading what the Bible says. Because a lot of people don't actually read the Bible. As they're Christians, they're just going to go to church and like listen to some scripture that the pastor says and go, oh yeah, cool, I love it, and then leave. And that's it. And that means that there's so much room for messing it up. You don't want to, you know, it doesn't feel real to me. That's not doing it 100%. So
one of the things that I love hearing you talk about is, on the one hand, to take the deliberate step to truly explore who is Jesus and what does it mean that he's died on the cross and that actually shapes my life. You have that aspect of it, yet you're also talking about freshman year. I loved my work, but I knew if I was going to keep loving my work, there had to be more to it than just like the pragmatism of doing this thing, a film. And it's like having that growth and that commitment sounds very much like it's driven your work to actually be more than what it might have otherwise been. Like when you talk about film, it's infectious the way that you describe how much you love it.
Oh, thanks.
It's like those two things for you really seem like they go hand in hand, which is like, man, it like A, isn't that the goal? And B, shouldn't that make sense if creativity actually is from God and to enjoy it to its fullest actually would seem to suggest that he would be in view in some fashion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just cool to get to listen to you say those things and how those have sort of joined together in your time at SCAD. So given that, what are some things, you know, you talked about that your sort of primary goal in film isn't necessarily the cultivator of the vision, but helping somebody kind of realize the vision. What are some things that either in your artwork that you're making or art that you look for film, like what are some things that you like to see or like to try to accomplish?
Oh man. Again, like you're asking an artsy question to a non-artsy guy. Because what I want to say is like, a part of me is like, I want to see like really cool, action, like tension. I want to be thrilled. I want to escape reality. And like it's a form of getting away from the madness of all this and going into a world that's more dangerous, but also has order to it. Like, you know, at the end of the movie that something's going to get resolved in some way. I don't know. Something about that is movies are always an escape from reality. So I want to do that. And a movie that's super like, grounded in reality in the sense of like, this is what real problems are like it doesn't really interest me as much. Like have I mentioned Citizen Kane on this podcast? Did I mention that?
I mentioned it. In passing. Okay. Okay, so here's my question then. So why is it, and I'm kind of curious what you think, why is it that especially maybe within the context of a film school, that sounds like an inferior answer than this like kind of big, grandiose artistic statement? Like why do you think we feel this need to sort of like downplay sort of that aspect of the film experience?
Yeah, I think it's because it's shallow.
But is it though? It might be. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just curious why we tend to just assume that it is.
I think it's because it doesn't. So I was talking with somebody yesterday, and he mentioned how he doesn't like the Marvel movies because they're just what they are, and there's no depth to it, and there's some validity to that. But I think the threshold of enjoyment for me is much lower than those people. Because I can just sit down and watch like Ant-Man and have a good time. Mm-hmm. Even though Ant-Man's not as good as some of the other ones. But
it's tough too. Cause I wrestle with that. Like it does feel like there's something just ontologically better about saying, well, like I want this big artistic statement. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying it seems like that's what we're supposed to say.
Yeah. I think it's because those types of movies are, like they're more than just, they have depth in the sense of like you can gather information and like it's saying something. Like I took a screenwriting class and I asked like how do you write a good script? Because he wasn't really going over like the fundamentals of writing a script. He was going over like he's just basically telling us to go write stuff and then like come back and show us our work. And I was like, I'm not even sure how to write. What are you talking about? And he was like, it needs to say something true about the human experience. And a lot of those, like John Wick, what does that say about the human experience? That killing a puppy is bad? Well, okay. But like Citizen Kane kind of goes over I want to get really like prestigious in what I'm about to describe right now, but it's hard to because I don't see it as easily. I want to say Citizen Kane is like, it's about somebody desperately trying to cover up his inferiority complex. He's like desperately trying to like show how great he is and make everybody else love him because he doesn't love himself. And that's deep. It says something about humanity. It says something about how we need the validity of others or like other people to validate us over anything else. Like he goes to like Charles Foster Kane goes to so much lengths to like kind of cover up his own insecurities, and he's so big and he's so larger than life with like sleeping around and he's got all these fast cars and he's got all the stuff. When he like at the very end of the movie you see like all of his possessions in a big like all boxed up like ready to be shipped out, and it's the best shot of the movie I think because it's just a camera flying over all of his possessions inside of his big mansion and it looks like a city. And for a second, I thought it was a city, but I was like, I looked further. I was like, oh no, that's just his stuff all packed up. And it's so massive. There's so much stuff. And then you compare, like, and then that, you know, that says something, that says something about the human experience. Then you look at John Wick, and it's like, it's just a cool action movie, and
it looks really nice. So I'm thinking about that, like, and I actually really like that definition of, like, a story says something about the human experience, yeah, because it's, like, that encapsulates a very broad array of stories. I think about, like, all right, what do we do every January, the first week when all of us get back? Like, we go light Christmas trees on fire and watch them burn. And there's something communal about that. And there's something about that that we all love. And it's hypnotic. And there's nothing, like, I probably try to make it into something deep and complex. And maybe there is. But at the end of the day, like, we're just standing around. And there's something enthralling about these things burning. Mm-hmm. And it's like there's something about that that we gravitate towards. That's part of the human experience.
Do you think it's I've heard alcohol described as a social lubricant. Do you think it's that sort of thing? Where like it's just an excuse to get together and hang out with friends?
Like, I think it's part of it. Like, yeah, there's a communal aspect where we've shared in this experience together and we want to do it again. Mm-hmm. But it's also when a tree goes up, nobody's standing around doing something else. We're all watching it. It's both.
Yeah.
There is something.
Well, it's cool to watch a pine tree burn up. Like, it's
and I guess the point of all that is to say, okay, if for no other reason we like to go watch these things go up in flames because it's cool and it's hard to find that somewhere else. And if that's true of us driving 30 minutes outside of town to watch trees burn, it seems reasonable to say that a movie of action and thrills does say something about the human experience. That's something that we like. It's something that we'll pay money to see. Yeah, it's just that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think there's value to that, and it's interesting that we kind of feel like we have to diminish that in some regard.
It's funny because if you look at the box office, that is not diminished at all. It's the other way around.
Yeah, people like it.
People really like it. People really like it. Yeah, I mean, Transformers: Dark of the Moon. No, what is the fourth one? Whatever that fourth one was called, made like $1 billion. That movie's garbage.
And people will go see it more than once. It's not even just like, oh, like I got what it was. Like, we want to get back in line.
Yeah. But like I said, the best movies can combine both. Like, as Star Wars 7 made $1 billion at the box office, but Avatar, or not Avatar, Endgame made like $3 billion or something like that. It became the top grossing movie, and I think it's because it, like, not only is it a big, cool, dumb action movie, it also, like, took time to develop those characters that are not just comic book dudes in spandex running around punching stuff. Yeah. Like, the Russo brothers took time to, like, really make them people. Mm-hmm. And humans.
Which actually makes you care about the action sequences. I mean, I had not seen, all of us went to go watch Endgame when it came out, and I had only seen a handful of Marvel movies, not enough to really feel like I know what was going on. Yet there was still emotional connectivity, which means when the action scenes were happening, I felt a reason to care about something.
Yeah.
You're right. They can, and they, I would say they probably should both exist together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yet we sometimes feel like we have to diminish that. That's so interesting. All right, so you've mentioned a number of movies that had an impact on you. If you were to pick a handful and say, like, these are some big influences, or these are movies that I kind of tend to go back to as, like, top of the list for me, mm-hmm. what comes to mind?
Tron Legacy, mostly because of the special effects. And I didn't know what a synth was until, like, way later, so I was just confused as what the soundtrack was.
I thought you were gonna say that movie because Daft Punk did the music for it. That was Daft Punk, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The music is cool, but the special effects were what really, like, blew my mind. But that soundtrack is banging as well.
It is. So. A good soundtrack. Absolutely.
Yeah. That shot where that the program gets derezzed and, like, it's inside of the games section, like when Flynn first jumps into the grid, and he, like, looks over and he sees some poor dude get cut in half by the memory disk, and the camera, like, is behind the poor program as he, like, is falling down and becoming bits. That shot specifically, you can see in the trailer, that shot was like, I don't know what to think right now. This is incredible. So that was the first movie that blew my mind. And then, like I said, Captain America, the First Avenger, just because it's America, and I'm a big patriot. I was like, yeah! And then Pirates of the Caribbean, another, like, fun action movie.
Yeah, right.
Big adventure. And also, Davy Jones is a really good character. Like, he's just this dude that lost his love, and he's, like, just angry and bitter about it, and he brings it on everybody else. And he's, like, he's the best character in those movies because he's real. Mm-hmm. Like, Jack is just a drunk who's funny, and Elizabeth Swann and Will Turner are great, but they don't have anything on Squid Face.
Yeah.
So that those movies are pivotal for me, because I was like, oh, these movies are so cool. And then, like, as I got older, I kind of realized that there was a little more depth to them, which made them made me appreciate them
and
more.
And world building. I mean, that's the first thing I think about when I think of those movies.
Yeah. And then, I guess, The Matrix.
Yeah.
That's
a good intersection of kind of those two things we've been talking about.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, it is. I feel like The Matrix is pretty self-explanatory. I haven't met a single person that doesn't like that movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
And the only people that will say they don't like the movie haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So that movie is just awesome.
Do you think it's aged well?
I think
it's actually been a while since I've seen it.
I saw it around this time last year, and I remember thinking, dang, this movie's still cool.
Okay, good. But I'm glad to know that.
I got some rose-colored glasses on.
Yeah, okay.
My dad would like excitedly like call me over across the house to watch an action scene if it came on. Like, he'd be ironing clothes and he'd be like, Nick, Neo is fighting all the Smiths in that one alley. And I'm like, oh shoot. I just drop whatever I'm doing and I just watch it with him for like 13 minutes, however long that big brawl is. Super cool.
All right. So we'll wrap up with this then. What works do you have on the horizon? You mentioned Chandler's set coming up.
Yeah.
Anything else that's either kind of in post-production or coming up to shoot?
I am directing a narrative film for my directing the narrative class called, tentatively, the title is called Out of This World. It is about a couple that are on a date, but one of them is an alien. And the other person is trying to figure out whether it's true or not. And that movie, I have to, like, you know, rein it back. And I'd be like, okay, it's two characters, like, talking. And it's about, like, awkwardness and, like, how awkward a first date is. And then, like, playing with this alien motif of, like, as a reason for them to, like, be awkward. So it's a little more external.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, like...
You're trying to tame something. The explosions, the literal explosions, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, like, I'm trying to say something to the human experience, man. And then I'm just on a bunch of other sets as, like, crew members doing stuff. I'm on, I'm a director of photography, actually, for I think it's an independent, like, film that's not SCAD related, but it's, like, from SCAD students. I'm not sure how that movie is affiliated with SCAD or anything, but somebody asked me to DP it, and I said yes.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that later on as well.
Yeah.
Lots of work.
Is there any place that we can check out those as they finish, or that we can stay in the loop for where to check them out when they finish?
I have an Instagram. It's at, I believe it's The Nick of Time. I'm going to double check real fast because
we don't want to perpetuate any false information.
Can you imagine if I said the wrong The Nick of Time. Yeah, it's the_Nick_of_time, all one word.
We can post a link.
Yes, that was.
Oh, if I say that, I better remember to actually do it.
And then I have a YouTube channel that's just Nick Koutsikas. My last name is Kootsikas. It's Greek. It's the best whenever
it
somebody...
It does sound very Greek, doesn't it?
Yeah. My favorite thing about it is when somebody tries to pronounce it and they get it wrong. Oh, it's the best. It's the best feeling.
I know what that feels like. Well, Nick, thanks for joining today. Until next time, appreciate it.
Thanks, man.